This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 138, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, InStockTrades.com, and Netflix.com.
I thought I saw a superhero, but it was just Spider-Man on Hollywood. I thought I saw a supermodel, but she had hair where I don't think she should. This can be a power.
Hey, it's Josh, and before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know that I recorded a little interview I did with writer B. Clay Moore of Hawaiian Dick and Casey Blue. Among other things, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, I wrote a response to something he wrote on his blog, and we got together to talk about it and some other stuff. And also, he does a killer Robert Kirkman impersonation, I swear. Anyway, that is just below this show on the feed, or you can download it directly from ifanboy.com. Thank you, and let's get on with the rest of the show.
Coming live from San Francisco and New York, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 138. Not really live, more recorded. My name is Ron, and I'm here with...
Connor.
And Josh.
Don't do the creepy voices. We are from iFanboy.com, and iFanboy.com, in case you don't know, is a website all about comic books. We read a lot of comic books. Every Wednesday, we read a good number of comics that come out, and one of us picks the best one that we felt that came out and dub it our pick of the week. We read a review on iFanboy.com, and then we come here on this podcast to talk about it. Josh had the pick this week, but before we get to that, I just want to remind everybody that we're going to talk about what happens in these comics. So we might spoil it if you haven't read the comics. So if you're a casual listener, be warned. And if you're a diehard, you might want to read your comics before you listen on. So press pause and then come back later. So Josh, why don't you tell us about your pick?
My pick was Scalped number 18 from Vertigo Comics, written by Jason Aaron, with art by David Furno.
David?
That's how it's spelled. There's an E on there. Okay. Either that or he's David E. That would be dumb.
Somebody really screwed up.
Yeah. His name's just David. It was a really, really poorly organized assistant editor somewhere. Just like, this will make him sound more famous. Or the dude's just from Kansas and he added it on there.
I don't know. What a...
Just to make himself stand out.
Yeah. Like guys like named Will who take off an L.
Yeah. Or go by Liam.
I hate those guys.
Yeah. Anyway.
Liam's a valid Irish name. Anyway.
Is it a derivative of William, though? Or isn't it just a name in of himself?
It's a name on its own.
It's a name on its own.
Yeah. A lot of Williams go by Liam, which I think is a cop-out. Anyway, okay.
It's fair. Then there's Topher's.
Oh, yeah. I knew a Topher.
Mm. Anyway, so...
Topher, short for Christopher.
I didn't have a ton of books this week, but this was really the only book that I had that even really came close, as far as I was concerned. The thing about it is, we've talked about this before, where a book is so good every month that it's hard to tell like when it's a good one.
I agree with that.
Like Brubaker or whatever. But, you know, compared to everything else I read this week, this was just, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. And, you know, going 18 issues with literally
almost without a bad panel. I mean, this is 18 issues of solid comic book all the way through. One of the things that was nice about this issue is that we've been on a very long storyline for many months now, at least 6 months, the Dead Mother storyline. And we're finally out of that. It didn't feel slow. I don't want to even make it feel like we were like, I was like, oh, let's move on. But it was very deliberately sort of, I'm trying to think of a word for slow that isn't negative. I was like plotting. No, but it wasn't. It was just thoughtful. We'll call it thoughtful. There's basically two main characters they've looked at in this series so far, and it's Dashiell Bad Horse, the renegade cop who's got a chip on his shoulder, and then Lincoln Redcrow, the crime lord who seems to have a bit of a heart. And this issue was all about Franklin Fallsdown, who is a cop on the reservation. And unlike everybody else, seems to be a genuinely good guy, if not a little beaten by life. I liked the change of pace. I liked the fact that the story is going to now move forward out of sort of all the introspection that's been going on. I liked this character a lot because there's been no – all the characters on here, and we talked to Jason Aaron about this. Well, Connor did, about how all of his characters are very gray. And this is just – this guy is just like a good guy, and he kind of wants to do the right thing, which is sort of – it's refreshing in this book because there isn't anyone like that. Just a good book. It was like a nice character study on somebody who's going to become a bigger part of the story. Fill-in art by David, who we spoke of earlier. Not the regular artist. At first, I didn't love it, but when I sort of backed up and I looked at sort of the figures and the body postures and the things like that he was putting on the page, I was actually more impressed. It's very sort of European style. Reminded me a little bit of Jordi Bernet.
Without any of the real talent.
Yeah. Well,
I think if you squint at the pages, they're really good. Mm-hmm. Like the layouts and the figures, but like when you get into the details, it was not good. It was really disappointing.
See, I didn't feel that way. I liked it well enough. It grew on me, and it fit the book. It fit the style of the book.
It fits style wise. Totally.
So we could have done a lot worse than this, I think. Overall, it was just I really liked this issue. It's hard because Scalped is always good, but wow, another really good one. How long can this go on? Was my thought. I like it when he takes a diversion in this land because all of the characters that we've met, even for a little while, are just fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting because I hadn't even thought of the fact that we have been in this – when you said it in your review on iFanboy, basically living in the same week in this book for about 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
And I hadn't even realized that because it's been so interesting and fascinating, and he has so many good stories to tell about all the people that are involved in this – particular story, which is the murder of the main character's mother.
Reading it in trade.
If that happens at the end of the first trade.
Oh, it does? Oh, I read it a while ago in trade.
I'm
on volume two, just so you know.
It's amazing that you can do that. You can spend 6 months on the same week and not have you feel bored. It's unlike a superhero story where there has to be constantly forward movement. Hmm. Whereas here you can just meander around in circles and circles and circles because everyone is interesting. And he has such a great hold on this world and the characters and just the environment and the reservation. And it's just everything is interesting about it. So it doesn't matter to me. I didn't even notice that that we'd done that. We hadn't moved forward.
And that's really the skill that I'm seeing out of Jason Aaron. Yep. I mean, the way that this book is paced, it has no right to still be interesting at this point. I mean, literally,
no.
It doesn't. It's unnatural. And it is. It's just, I can't think of a moment when I was reading this where I was like, okay, come on, let's move on. Like every nook and cranny that gets explored is interesting. And I'm just – the consistency on this book is just outstanding.
So. You know what I will give the art credit for is the coloring. Who is the colorist in this?
Lawridge?
Lawridge?
No? Brusco is the last name. The first name is not –
Julia.
Not if you're going to try.
What I find really interesting is that Scalp is a book that is featuring Native Americans taking place in the middle of America. As far as I can tell, Jason Aaron is the only American working on it.
It's true.
And according to him, he did very little research.
It has a very European feel to the art. And that's I think it's important because I wonder if an American artist would come with too much baggage.
Mm-hmm.
Too many preconceived notions about
try too hard.
Indians. Yeah, or just be like stereotypical Indian stuff, whereas a European artist has to do a lot of research and really has to, you know what I mean? Like, there's, you don't have to. I'm just assuming they would be less inclined to put stereotypes in.
Also, there's the fascination with sort of the, I guess, the Western
West
that exists in Europe that's sort of been dormant here. You know, to as large an extent as it used to be, I don't know. There is like a romance about Indians and cowboys and Indians and things like that. And this is, well, not about cowboys and Indians. It is an extension of, this is like after cowboys and Indians, what happened to the Indians, which is, I mean, it is just an endlessly fascinating subject. And only 18 issues in, I feel like we've barely scratched the surface of what's possible here. And I'm really excited about the possibilities of what this kid, what this could become, but a little bit worried that, you know, it won't make it far enough for us to know.
I'm actually surprised we're only 18 issues in. It feels like it's been around much longer than 18 issues.
Yeah.
It's just been so dense, so
almost
packed with stories.
That's almost stuff. 2 years, right? It's come out pretty much on time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a late book. So it's a year and a half of just great comics. I mean, I've made the point, this is right up there with the best of stuff that Vertigo's doing right now. It's right up there with Fables and DMZ. Easily is the best stuff that's out there.
I think it's the best for me. You know, I'm not reading as much Vertigo as you are, but for me, it's the best. I mean, I'm reading DMZ, but I think this is the best book they're doing. It's one of the best books, period, I think.
It totally is. Yeah, it totally is.
Isn't Ron, you have the first couple trades. Aren't they cheap, or isn't the first one cheap?
I think so. Let me look at my shelf.
$10 for 5 issues.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it was one of those $9.99 jobbies.
Yeah, so if you haven't picked, you know, pick up the first trade. It's cheap.
Is he still doing the money back guarantee?
I haven't heard that he's not.
Yeah, so if you don't like it, you can send it to Jason Aaron and he'll refund you.
Don't do that.
Well, that's what he said.
I know, but
he might have stopped that. We didn't know the expiration date of that offer.
I think Jason Aaron is on his way to becoming a pretty big name.
Well, I mean, if you look at
this is Jason Aaron week.
Yeah, I know. If you look,
three books this week.
Yeah, he had. What was the third? He had Ghost Rider at Marvel. What else did he have?
Hellblazer.
Oh, right. Gee, he wrote Hellblazer?
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
He's writing big books, and he's getting a lot of accolades, and, you know, like, this is his powers,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
He's going to have a book like that. And so it'll be nice. You know, he's exclusive to Marvel now, but they're letting him do this.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
You know what? The biggest mistake that DC has made, I mean, in a whole long string of mistakes in the last couple of years, is to not have signed him up to an exclusive deal right away.
Yeah,
I mean they blew it by letting him go off to Marvel. I mean,
well, I think he's a Marvel guy.
I know, but I mean, if they, all right, maybe they tried and I don't know, but if they didn't try, then that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they did or didn't, but they should have tried at least.
Yeah, I would have a hard time thinking what books that he would be good at Marvel.
Ghost Rider.
But then again, I'm sorry, DC.
Yeah, Jonah Hex.
Well,
they don't need a new writer on that.
That's pretty much. I'm just brainstorming. I'm sorry.
Like, yeah. Well, I mean, it's surprising. It's hard to say because the stuff that I've seen out of him definitely has a similar tone. But I don't know. I think I was surprised at his really good handle on how to do Wolverine and his really good handle on how to, you know, and how to come up with a different kind of Ghost Rider. Although, like we said, it feels like a Vertigo book.
He's just supremely talented. That's all there is to it, really.
He really is. He really is. And, you know, I'm just so glad I'm reading this book. And I have heard nothing but that from people who went to pick it up.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Everybody's like, you know, I'm pissed off you made me pick up another title, but I'm really glad you did because it's great.
If there's one title to pick up,
yeah,
it's Scalped. I mean, if there's, you know, we recommend a lot of books, and if you're like, oh, they recommend too many books, if I could pick one, I would say Scalped. It needs the help. It's a good book.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't be disappointed in it. You don't need to pick up Wolverine because everyone's picking up Wolverine, you know.
But that doesn't mean
Wolverine came out.
That doesn't mean that Wolverine wasn't good because it was awesome.
No. Wolverine number 66, which is the first issue that Jason Aaron didn't write in the last couple of months, written by Mark Millar, art by Steve McNiven, was probably my pick of the week.
Yeah, it's hands down. Good job, Connor. Oh. You know, and you know why? You know what put me over the edge? Like, I was reading it, and so, you know, so it's issue number 66 in the regular Wolverine, you know, series, but it's a jump forward in the future kind of story. It's basically, the story is called Old Man Logan, and this honestly, this probably could have been or should have been a Marvel Knights or a miniseries. I don't know why they're doing it in the self-titled Wolverine.
Because Mark Miller has no rules.
Yeah, true. But
let him do whatever he wants as long as it doesn't coincide with anything.
But it's true. That's a very good point.
Except for Civil War, which was a mishmash.
But so I'm reading this, and I'm going, and I'm like, this can't be this good. I can't believe this is this good. And then I get to the very, very end, and I see a two-page map. And I said, this is a fucking awesome book. When I saw that map, it sealed the deal for me. essentially, just to sum it up, it looks like it's a dystopian future story where basically the hero's lost and the villains run the country. And
it's wanted.
It's wanted. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I mean, if I had any problem with this, it was sort of the I feel like I've read bits of this before, all put together into one thing. I mean, it was The Unforgiven.
Yeah.
So that was right away. I will say, regardless,
come on, Blind Old Man Hawkeye, you've got to love that.
Yeah.
You know, here's what bugged me about that is I was just like, that's just Green Arrow from Dark Knight Returns.
No, but he was crazy in Dark Knight.
He was crazy.
Yeah. I know.
And he had no arm. But no, Dark Knight, so we're
not interchangeable.
We're jumping ahead. So basically the hero's lost and Wolverine is living in Sacramento, California, and he's got a wife and kids, and apparently he's gone pacifist, where whatever happened that made the heroes lose was so awful that he would never take arms up again. And it's kind of like it's in the future, but it seems to have got thrown back to like the late 1800s kind of feel, where they're on a farm and they got to make rent, and the kids are calling Wolverine Pa, and it's just like, I was like, what is, it's like Little House on the Prairie.
You think he had it coming?
Yeah, but apparently times are hard for Wolverine and his family, and they live in, according to the map, they live in what's called Hulkland, which was formerly the Abomination's territory, and Hulk's grandkids show up and to collect rent that Wolverine doesn't have, and they beat the crap out of him. And so it's kind of at his wit's end, not sure what to do. And then his old buddy Hawkeye, who now is blind, shows up and says, "Hey, you can earn some money if you help me drive cross country. I got to deliver something." And so it starts off on a road trip.
Was he ever buddies with Hawkeye, or is that a new thing?
He's buddies with
everybody. They're in Adventures Now together.
Yeah, he's buddies with everybody in some way, shape, or form, I think. But and so like there are little things that Hawkeye's car is the Spider-Mobile from the 70s, which I thought was funny. And just the map itself is what engaged me about this. I mean, they show their route across the country, and all the entire United States has been resegmented into, the Kingdom of the Kingpin, which was formerly the domain of Magneto, and Doom's Lair. And there are cities throughout it, like the Cedar City of Champions or Paste Pot Creek, which was awesome.
So there's two segments, though, that are unlabeled.
Yeah, exactly. The big middle segment and then the small kind of by the great. Also, the geography on this map is all over the place because San Francisco is like in the middle of California. It's very kind of bizarre. But this kind of tapped into my, oh my God, what is this kind of fascination, curiosity, where he lays out a couple of pieces and shows the world that we're in and we don't have any answers. And I just want to know how we got here, why it's like that, what's going on. So this completely grabbed me. Connor, why did you like it so much?
Well, for one thing, the day I read it, I think I caught a rerun of Firefly.
Nice.
So it was kind of like the futuristic Western genre of the day. So for me, that was like, my bread and butter. I love Westerns. It was like a Marvel Elseworlds tale. So
yeah.
In that sense, I really love Elseworlds tales because it's a nice twist on what's normal. I mean, it could have been another story about Wolverine being angry and getting revenge on somebody, or it could be an interesting tale about the future where he's a pacifist and how did we get there, and what made him a pacifist, and why the Hulk's people in jar. There's so many mysteries here that make it so much more interesting than your standard monthly story.
Yeah.
And the art was fantastic. McGiven's using a slightly different style. It's not as clean. It's more lines.
Can I just say it's good to have Steve McNiven back?
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, like, this is the McNiven that I like.
That two-page...
Not the stuff that was happening at the end of Civil War, where we were like, what's going on with Steve McNiven? Like, this is the Steve McNiven.
Yeah. And the two-page spread when the Hulk's grandkids show up in a old, beat-up Fantastikar, and with all green paint painted over the fours to say dead and forgotten and banners, and it's just like, God, what is this world? So this is a great issue. It completely caught me by surprise. I was not expecting it to be this good. So,
well, Miller starts strong, so hopefully he continues.
Yeah,
Unforgiven. They basically spell it out right there in one of the cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unforgiven. Yeah, but
I don't think I like Miller.
You don't?
I feel like whenever I read his stuff, everybody else is like, this is great. And I'm like, I don't know why I don't love this.
Well, this is, I mean, part of this is that this is, and I'm surprised, I mean, I don't know. This is a significant portion of this book, and mainly the map, is Marvel porn. I mean, if you look at it, you know what I mean? Like, it's this romp through the Marvel universe, you know, and
which
like.
Is, to me.
There's genre bending, because the Marvel porn portion doesn't get to me. It's the genre.
Yeah.
It's the Batman in old England. Yep. You know, it's like, that's what's fun about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like fun.
It's like a Mark Miller thing. Like whatever it is that he does, I don't like as much as everybody else does, and I never have. And I go through phases where I was like, well, maybe I'll give it another shot, and then I'm like, I really still don't like it. It's just whatever his style is. He seems like a perfectly nice guy.
Yeah, he is. He's very nice.
Sure, he is. But I just am not a fan, really.
All right.
This was okay, but I didn't love it. For me. I can see. I'm glad that you did. I remember seeing the ad and thinking, that looks real good. I do remember that. Does look real good.
Are you going to read it? Are you going to commit to it or no?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It was stuff I liked about it. I just didn't think it was the greatest thing ever.
All right. Nobody says it was the greatest thing ever, but for me, it was the greatest thing this week. So.
I spent $85 this week, by the way.
Jesus Christ.
I spent
$10. Nice. Would you read two books?
My discount kicked in.
Oh, nice. Good job. Well, did you pick up finally the second issue of Razzle?
Yeah. You know what? We're going to have to bring these out a little sooner if you want me to remember what's going on, Jeff. because this whole quarterly thing is not going to work.
Isn't the next issue September?
Yes.
I thought there was enough recap when he was when Razzle was explaining what he does and everything. I thought there was.
No, you know what? Let me be fair. I wasn't lost. Okay. I picked up where we were when we left off, but I was still like at the end of it. I was like, wow, we're still in the opening act scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
So this is 6 months for you know what would be the first 5 minutes of a movie, maybe 10.
Yeah.
How weird is it to see Jeff Smith doing adult stuff?
Yeah, you know what gets me? It's not so much the art; it's the font. I just the lettering. Whether he's lettering it or not, that lettering style screams bone to me. And I know that it's his own personal lettering style, but right. That's what strikes me odd. So,
all right, why don't you guys explain the stories? People who don't read it.
All right, Josh.
I don't know what's going on.
Okay, it was clearer this time than the last one.
Yeah, because he explains
There's a dimensional hopping art thief, and somebody is after him. And the thing that's after him is this weird vertical-eyed looking thing.
Lizardy thing.
And he at the end of the last one, he jumped into a world that he was trying to get away because they were chasing him and they were taking shots at him. And he jumped into a world that looked exactly like his, but he found out it wasn't exactly his because there was no Bob Dylan in that world. So he jumped a couple more times and he finds himself at the home of a favored hooker of his. And they have some sex, and then he's all surly and sad. So he goes to a strip club. I mean, this is Jeff Smith we're talking
about. Yeah, yeah.
And then, here's the spoiler. This is not a lot happened. There's a whole issue is that he comes back and he found that this girl who he had a connection with, the bad guys got her. And that's where we are. So we still don't really know what's going on or who's chasing him or anything like that. I think this was a stronger issue than the previous one. It made me interested. I do want to keep reading it. I feel like I want more still. This is how I felt last time. And like having to wait till September is kind of a, oof.
Yeah, you know? It hurts. Yeah, it does hurt.
Yeah. So, you know, in 2013, when the collection comes out, that might be a good time to jump on.
I thought it was a strong second issue. So I enjoyed it.
No, I definitely did.
Yeah.
I thought the art was really strong. I was interested. It was, I don't feel like the most original story of all time, but it was interesting that it was coming out of Jeff Smith, I suppose.
Did Biff run everything?
That would be great.
Yeah, there was a casino. It was awful.
Mad Dog. I don't know. It was kind of weird. It was definitely weird just because it's like – it's this close to being like porno comics out of the guy who did Bone, which doesn't sound all that weird, but if you know what it means. Then...
Actually, it sounds like it makes sense if you don't know what it means.
Right, exactly. But Bone was so like family friendly and – I mean, it was scary and stuff, but there was nothing – sexual about it at all.
Yeah.
No bones.
There's definitely sexuality in this.
Very innocent.
Yeah, the main character is very grizzled.
Yeah, pretty grizzled, and I don't know. I mean, that's the thing is, I like the grizzledness. I also like the exposition, and I like that you're right. You know, like you pick it up, and you're like, God, I don't remember the first issue, but I was pulled back in and basically explained what happened when he's I mean, using a cheap device of Razzle talking to the hooker, telling her what just happened. You know, but
yeah, but I mean, you think about it. Is that going to happen in every issue?
I don't know.
In every issue,
yeah. You know what though? Like to be fair, like I hate bad exposition. Like when they're talking to a character, but you know that they're actually talking to us. But in this, it didn't stand out. It was pretty elegantly done. Who knows how I'll feel if the next one comes out in September. 4 issues a year, though, does not a sprawling epic make. I mean, was that how often he was putting Bone out? That's what she said.
Bone's release schedule was sporadic. I mean, there were times where it was monthly, there were times where it wasn't. I don't know if there's enough – what the average time in between issues was.
Right. So,
yeah. Oh.
I mean, it's good. It's worth reading. We're not very far into it yet, so I can't judge it too much. But it's definitely different for him, which is almost enough to keep me interested. He's doing better at this point than he did in the Shazam book at this point.
All right, well that's good. That's a start.
To me.
going back to the theme of porn, Guardians of the Galaxy #2 was more Marvel porn, actually.
I love this book.
I love the fact that you love this book. But so the thing is that a little history for those who might not remember the pre-Image days. But right before Image started, Jim Valentino was writing a book called Guardians of the Galaxy. And I read that book and I loved that book. And it was characters that came up in the pages of Avengers, I believe. And it was all in space. I believe it was in the future. And that's where this book.
Yeah, that was the Captain America shield.
Yeah, yeah. And what happened was that Vance Astrovic, who is Marvel Boy from the New Warriors and then became Justice in the Avengers, he was a character in the Guardians of the Galaxy. And what happened was that he somehow, at some point in the Marvel timeline, he got thrown into the future and he carried Cap's shield. And it was kind of the extension to the present day Marvel Universe. So in this issue, you see on the cover, you see the Rocky Raccoon or whatever his name is, Rocket Raccoon, not Rocky Raccoon, and the tree guy, and you see kind of a Cap shield kind of on ice, and basically they find a asteroid made of ice, and Vance Astrovic is in the ice, very Captain America-esque. And when that page happened, when he melted from the ice, he's holding Cap shield, I think I squealed. So
see, I didn't know any of that.
Right, and it still worked, right?
I'm telling you, for whatever reason, Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning can write cosmic characters for me, and it's because they do it. They don't take themselves really seriously.
Yep.
And that to me is the key to this book, is that it doesn't take itself really seriously. Because when you start getting Adam Warlock and there's no irony involved in it, I can't buy it at all. So yep. Like when you hear people say, "Oh, I can't get into cosmic characters," that's why. However, too much irony, it's just like, what's the point? Why am I reading this? Do you think it's a joke? It's a really nice balance of they like it,
yep.
They're having fun with it, they respect it, and they're taking it seriously enough, but they also are saying this should be fun and sort of silly. And I laughed when I was reading this book.
Oh, yeah, me too. There were mainly Rocket Raccoon and the name.
Oh, God, that was hilarious.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like the whole time you kept going, Guardians of the Galaxy, that's a good name, right? Over and over again.
And then like later in the issue, he's like, so we're going with that, right? Like he's just obsessed with that. I love it.
You know, great big Marvel cosmic art by Paul Pelletier.
Yep.
It was just a fun book, and I love the storytelling technique, where there's the little confessional booths, the little real world booth where they talk to the different members of the team. It feels like there's a lot more that can go on, and this is just a fun book. Fun stuff.
Awesome.
I'm glad.
I'm so glad you like it because it's such a fun book. And this is that, honestly, this and Nova, if anything, like those are the books that I would flag as crossover potential for like somebody like you. Like if you like science fiction and like good stories, and I'm so glad that Abnett and Lanning are doing it and you're enjoying it. Like
doing it well, yeah, and consistent.
Exactly.
You know, one of the other things is these are books that come out of the Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest.
Yep.
I didn't read a page of those.
No, you don't need to. Yeah.
I didn't feel lost for a second. It does a really nice job of keeping things going. And you know, these books they come out on time, they're good books, and they don't get enough buzz.
Yep. So definitely check out Guardians of the Galaxy #2. You could probably find #1 very easily. If you like science fiction, it's totally worth it. So yay.
One of the other things is it feels a little like Grant Morrison.
Interesting. Well, they are British. Really, they are British writers. So, you
know. No, I know. But it's got that big sort of wacky, crazy, they live in a sentry's head.
Yep.
Or it's not a sentry. It's a celestial's head.
Yep.
Like in a time slip. Like it's got all of that kind of thing that only Grant Morrison gets credit for doing.
Right.
Anyway, so we'll move on. But that's cool.
So I hear Justice League of America number 22 getting beat up all over the web. Is that the case?
It shouldn't, because despite Ed Bendis' best efforts, it was a really good issue.
Oh, really? I heard a lot of yeah. people. I mean, I know from what I saw and stuff like that, I saw some people not liking, and I know I was a little dismayed when we were back to the Red Tornado.
No, but it worked.
ready.
Awesome.
these are like the 3 issues in a row, 4 issues in a row. These are the kind of stories that we were hoping to get from Dwayne McDuffie when he was brought on.
Yep.
And then thrust into co-writing all these crossover books that didn't make any sense. But now he's just focusing on the team. He's just telling team stories. Basically, this is a part one of a storyline, so we don't know what's happening yet other than Amazo has taken over Red Tornado's body. But the real strong point to this issue was all the little character stuff between the characters, because he knows them so well. The little stuff with Red Arrow and Hawkgirl, who are having a lover's spat, even though they think they're not having a lover's spat. Everyone else knows they are, but everyone, you know, the only two that don't know it are them. And Superman and Hal sort of offhandedly giving them advice, and just every little character moment in this was almost pure gold. Even kicking Vixen off the team for stealing everybody's powers felt like a really spot on thing. It was just reading all these characters for once felt like it was reading the book you hadn't read in a while.
Yeah. I do got to say it was interesting because I read Trinity before this, and in Trinity there was I've been having a hard time buying Black Canary as the chairperson of the Justice League because I feel as if she has no it's like oh, let's give it a Black Canary, wink wink, you know, knowing that Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are really in charge. And I thought Trinity, in the pages of Trinity number 3 this week, they're fighting and then the Justice League is fighting and they're losing, and then Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman show up and Black Canary is like, oh, thank God, you know. And so like I was like, oh, that's kind of annoying. But then in this book, to see Black Canary step up as the leader and kick Vixen's ass off the team for stealing people's powers was awesome. So I don't know. I thought that was an interesting kind of dynamic in terms of where they're taking the team, and which should be the premier book within DC. So
yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, and a lot of people don't read it because of the art. I have to sort of stomach it and move on. But Dwayne McDuffie has such a strong handle on who these people are that the stuff that when he writes the dialogue, it works so perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's just this book is they stumbled so much in the beginning now that I think it's hard to reclaim it. You know,
right.
Even though this is the top selling book at DC that's not, you know, special like Final Crisis or Batman,
right?
All Star Batman. This is the top selling regular book, so it still is in that sense the flagship, but it doesn't feel like the flagship.
Right. It did feel to me. I did enjoy it, but I felt the issue was, and maybe it might have been the art, but I just thought it was a little scattered because it was moving from scene to scene a lot. But overall, I enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really, really strong. He's had 3 strong ones in a row.
Wow.
Josh, you stopped buying it.
I haven't bought it since Meltzer left.
Well,
I haven't been buying it at all. I don't know. I mean, I think it's what you're saying, like. If I'm buying JLA, I want it to feel like the most important book in DC. I think that's what it is. That's what I want when I buy JLA. Definitely want it to feel like the most important book at DC, and it doesn't. It feels like an also-ran that doesn't matter. I'm not reading it, but I don't feel like I don't know what's going on.
Right.
And yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't been that in ever. I mean,
it wasn't that when Grant Morrison was doing it, or
that was ever ago. That was 1990. Yeah, no.
It was 10 years ago, my friend. 10 years.
It should feel like The Avengers feels. The Avengers feels like the book at Marvel.
Which
the
one?
New Avengers.
New Avengers, yeah.
I mean, they're the same title at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, they so are. This poem was weekly, too. So.
I mean, that's what I want. And I don't like to buy the big team book unless that's what it feels like. And that's always been the way that I've sort of gone about it.
Yeah.
As soon as it starts to feel like that team book is taking a backseat to everything else that's going on, I get less interested in it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they've totally stumbled with it since the reboot.
It's unfortunate.
Yep. Jim Halen's Universe is one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores. Jim Halen's Universe offers the best selection of comic titles and related merchandise, from mainstream to mangas to minis. Jim Halen's Universe has it all. Jim Halen's Universe is located opposite the Empire State Building in Midtown Manhattan at 325 Newdorp Lane in Staten Island. You can visit Jim Halen's Universe on the web at www.ghuniverse.com or myspace.com/Jim Halen's Universe. Jim Halen's Universe, where art and literature meet.
All right, so I want to talk about Gemini number 2. Gemini is written by Jay Ferber, and the art is by John Samariva. And
not gonna work here anymore.
And I did. it's a second issue of a 5-issue miniseries, and this is like the a new character in the Furburyverse, which everybody knows I'm a big fan of. But I think this one's really interesting because it's only 5 issues, so it's kind of worth sampling. And I don't know if they're gonna move forward with it afterwards. But Gemini is a character who it's kind of like the for those of you who know movies like the Manchurian Candidate kind of thing, where there's a guy who lives his life and then he gets a phone call and it says, you know, Gemini activate, and then he becomes a superhero. And then when he's done doing what he needs to do, they say Gemini deactivate, and then he goes back to his everyday life. So he doesn't even know that he's a superhero in his day-to-day life. So it's an interesting take on the whole kind of superhero dynamic. But with this issue, I just thought it was interesting because they're introducing, again, like kind of like the Wolverine, they're introducing more of this world where we get introduced to another hero who is activated, deactivated, and it's this idea of this organization that's got all these kind of sleeper agents throughout the city, and you don't know why, you don't know what, and it looks like somebody from inside their organization is trying to make Gemini aware of who he is to kind of tear it all down. So it was just really smart writing and really kind of neat to read. I'm not a big fan of Samariva's art. It's that kind of big chinned animation-y kind of style, you know. Almost, you know, very kind of Scotty Young-like-esque, I would think, but with a little cleaner. But the story has been – it's surprised me how much I enjoyed this issue. So, yeah. Yay, Gemini. So,
You go.
I'm enjoying X-Factor, but I'm not excited about it like I used to be.
Oh, man, I got excited at the end of it, though.
Yeah, but you're X-Men.
No, but you for a reason why, because I haven't been on the X-Factor bandwagon for about a year now, actually, because I felt as if it's kind of – it started off really strong and really good and meandered and got sucked into a lot of the crossovers and things like that.
Well, that was when it killed it. Their momentum was strong up until the Messiah Complex crossovers, and now it's been floundering since it had a shoehorn in all these other storylines. But I feel like this issue is setting it back.
Yeah, no, this issue in one issue shifted the paradigm and got it back to being cool.
Well, I mean that's –
or the potential to be cool.
Serve judgment. Right, that's what I mean. Like, but I came out of this one going, okay, that was all right. And the thing is, now when I – like for the past while, when I read an X-Factor book, I'm just like, all right, I guess I'll keep reading this because I remembered how much I liked it. So I was sort of coasting on fumes.
Yeah. Well, I mean
– they had to get the hell out of Mutant Town. They had to get away from this whole – they've been going in circles ever since.
And Peter David was able to do it in a way that makes it interesting, where he makes it basically they get the hell out of Mutant Town and they're on the run from Val Cooper and the Sentinels, the one, you know, the government one group, where basically, you know, Val Cooper says, listen, you're either going to go in the witness protection program or you're going to work for us. And X-Factor chooses to go, we're going to take neither. And they blow up the building in Mutant Town and then they go on the run. And it ends with Val tracking down Jamie. And so it's got this, it's going to be this interesting, Jamie's not going to tell the team that Val tracked him down. And it's going to try to play both sides from the middle and be a wreck doing it. And it seemed like, I like the direction this is taking now. Like, so
I do think that he writes that character. I don't know if anybody else can write that character to make him nearly as interesting as
so
he does.
So good. So good.
He's really, really good at that.
Yeah. So.
That's all.
Yeah. So the much-aligned Teen Titans year one came out. So I've read all 4 issues leading up to issue number 5. And Connor, my question to you is, like, is this year one – like, I felt as if the Green Arrow year one had a straight story to tell. Whereas I feel as if this is just a bunch of, you know, moments and vignettes. Yeah.
Well, and there was a story, remember?
Yeah.
We got maligned because we forgot.
Right, no, I remember that. Right.
And but the first three issues had an arc and a plot.
Yep.
And then it ended. And now what we've had the last 2 months, or last 2 issues anyway, have been random stories involving the characters.
Right.
So it takes away from the feeling of, all right, Batman Year One, Green Arrow Year One, Batgirl Year One. All the Year One stories had an arc.
Yep.
It had a story to tell. It told it in 6 issues. Boom, you're out. Here it's kind of like, well, what do we do this month?
Right. But that said, I love this issue.
It was fun. I mean, it was really good. I thought the art was a little bit shaky at times. Other times I thought it was really good. And I didn't like at all the Red Arrow or the Speedy drawing. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I didn't. His nose was weird. It was bent at an odd angle, but like the turtle was very funny.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love Kershaw. I see where I'm looking at a page just with Speedy, and I see basically the main thrust of the story is Wonder Girl and Speedy go out on a date, and the Arrow car gets stolen, and they try to track it down, and the stress causes Speedy to snap at her, and then it goes poorly. And all the while in the background, you've got Kid Flash and Aqualad just hanging out in the cave, just being teens. I don't know. There was something really endearing about it. I like the way Amy Wolfram writes these characters. I just enjoyed the issue as a single issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. So
it was okay. I thought Speedy was more than just snapping at her. He was really a dick to her.
Yeah.
He had a lot of insecurity in him that I don't know was there before. And she was just a naive doormat, within her character so far in this book. But
yeah,
that was just a disaster of a date. Almost shockingly, because I didn't expect him to be that much of an ass to her.
Yeah. Well, look who his mentor is.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Batman even said. Yeah. Doesn't Batman say that or somebody? I don't know. Yeah. Somebody says that. I thought that might have been. Oh, that was in Justice League.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Weird. We have two books dealing with Roy Harper's romances. That's funny. So
yeah.
He wishes he was Dick Grayson.
But it was okay. It was good. I wish it would have been a 6-part story and not a 3-part story followed by 3 random issues.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all.
I love my Kershaw though. Oh, please put him on the Flash. Please put him on the Flash.
Would you rather have him as drawing the Flash or a better writer?
Probably, I don't know. That's a tough one. Better writer.
You'd also only get Flash every 4 months or so.
Did you listen to Mark Waid's interview on Word Balloon? They skipped right over the Flash.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well.
I was like, are you going to? No. Blames the readers every time. Anyway, Hellblazer 245, just to finish this Jason Aaron sandwich up. I had heard that Jason Aaron was going to be writing Hellblazer, and it wasn't until I got to the end of this that I saw that his name was the writer, which I did notice as soon as it started that I was like, this is different, because everything else that I've been reading of Hellblazer, almost the entire time that I'm reading it, does not really delve into the past. It doesn't really have a lot to do with sort of the past continuity. And it just so happens that I've been sort of reading the trades and getting caught up. And this immediately harkens back to one of the earliest, most important John Constantine stories ever, which was sort of his first dealings with a demon and everything. Basically, they're at this club in Newcastle, and there's a demon, and he possesses a girl. All these people get killed. And at the end of it, John Constantine gets institutionalized for being crazy.
Wow.
And that's sort of – and when the whole series starts, that's sort of he's come out of the institution, and like people know that he was in the nut house, and that's sort of always in his past. And so this is going back to the thing that caused that. And there was some fucked up shit in this.
No. Really? Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
I'm shocked that Jason Aaron wrote some fucked up shit.
I mean, a dude fucked a dead, rotting dog carcass.
Jesus.
I mean, like it was messed up. And one thing that Aaron did that was really smart is that, listen, the dude's from the middle of America. He's not going to be the most British guy in the world. John Constantine was not featured in this until the very last page, which was probably a wise move. There have not been a lot of Americans who have written him for a good reason. But, you know, he did okay. But he was
Azzarello.
Only a page or two. Azzarello didn't do so great with it, I don't think. It was all right. It wasn't amazing from the other stuff that I've read.
Who's Different writing artists. It before? Diggle was writing it?
Andy Diggle.
You
and
want,
I think
you want him back? Just,
yeah, I think this is just a 2-part story. Oh, yeah. I want Diggle back badly. Diggle.
I think I saw Brubaker, I think, post on his MySpace or something like that, something about how fantastic the Diggle Hellblazer run has been. And just it's funny, like, it made me laugh when I heard Jason Aaron's writing it, how like this book is finally getting some buzz again, and then now somebody else is writing it, so.
You know. Well, it's just a fill-in. It's a fill-in by a guy who's also got a lot of buzz, so
sure.
I don't think it can hurt. Different artist on this, a guy, Sean Murphy, who I am not familiar with, but it's kind of funny. It's totally going back into like deep Constantine continuity, which they don't do very often.
Yeah.
It was good. It was a fun issue.
Yeah, cool.
It was appropriately fucked up.
Excellent. And if you enjoy fucked up things and you want to check out more of Jason Aaron's work in Scalped, or maybe you want to check out other Hellblazer trades, you should head over to InStockTrades.com. That's your one-stop shop on the web for trade paperbacks and graphic novels. You can save up to 37% off. They've got free shipping on orders over $50, so that's pretty good when you're buying those big hardcovers and those omnibuses and the like. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. Every Wednesday, they get updated with their new releases, and when you make an order, it usually ships within 48 hours. So head over to InStockTrades.com, and that's where you can find the iFanboy Book of the Month, Alan Moore's Complete Wildcats, for 47% off. That's $15.89. That's such savings. It's amazing. So InStockTrades.com for all your trade paperback needs.
We're not quite done with the books yet. We'd like to highlight a couple of user reviews. And I don't know if I can pronounce this, but Ben Sidhe Whale. I don't know. That's how it works. Ben Sidhe Whale says of the Incredible Hercules 118, gives a story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And I just thought this was interesting. Amadeus Cho is one of my favorite Marvel characters ever. And his puppy, whose name was finally revealed in this very issue as Kirby, short for Kerberos, is one of the reasons I love him. I was devastated not long ago. I have never forgiven Black Widow when the poor puppy's back was broken. I asked Chris Giarrusso to sketch me an Amadeus Cho and pup. It's gorgeous, by the way, at the Emerald City Comic Con. I submitted the name in the Name Amadeus Cho Puppy Contest, which wanted to name him Sancho, as in Don Quixote. And his genius master is going around. Anyway, he loves the puppy. So apparently this was just the most interesting review I'd read. So I was like, I'm going to read this and hope somebody knows what it means. But we never talk about this book, so
This was the renamed after Hulk, after World War Hulk and then the Red Hulk's launch, they changed Incredible Hulk to Incredible Hercules. And they're following the group that was kind of helping Hulk right before World War Hulk, including this Amadeus Cho character, who I know nothing about, but I've heard people say nothing but good things about the character and about what Greg Pak's been doing with him. So I don't know if Greg Pak
he was really annoying in the Hulk issues during World War Hulk.
Yeah, well, maybe because it was out of context, but who knows?
That was one of the worst parts of World War Hulk. bad parts.
I'm just trying to fill in things that we don't cover. So any of that made sense to you? He was so enthusiastic about it that it had to be highlighted.
All right, Connor.
Torque writes Iron Man, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 30. He gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And he says, all things considered, I enjoyed this issue. It's not a knock-your-socks-off kind of thing, but I don't think it was meant to be. It's clear Fraction's book is now going to be the A-list Iron Man book, in my opinion, and that's certainly okay with me, as this book is still a very interesting read. The writing was enjoyable and the art was very good. I'm certainly on board with this arc for the time being.
Is he still on a leave of absence?
No.
He's back.
This book... it's taken a dive. I mean, I'll be honest. He his review hinted at how sort of lukewarm he was, and now Stuart Moore is writing this arc, and it just felt like Maria Hill and Dum Dum Dugan are important in it, and it's just like it's just a book out of time. It's like the book that is it doesn't matter right now.
Yeah,
every book that's not an Avengers book is not connected to the Avengers story. They are.
I know, but it's like, come on.
It's the thing no one's talking about.
Yeah. Well, Iron Man is kind of important right now.
Yeah,
right.
And you can't.
So is Mr. Fantastic, but Fantastic Four is not connected either.
Yeah.
Jeez. No, but I mean, just in terms of a marketing standpoint, this book should be. They should have big guns on this book, and they put Matt Fraction on.
Well, because Invincible Iron Man is the one that they're pushing.
Why can't they push two good books? I mean, look at you got Paul Dini and Grant Morrison writing the two Batman books.
Yeah, but they're pushing Batman. They're not pushing Detective.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, Iron Man is the biggest movie in the country.
Yeah.
You know, let's put our best foot forward on this. And this was just kind of – it was a fill-in issue. Yeah. A month after the – less than a month after that movie comes out, they should be doing everything they can to blow people away right now. And it's not.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, the Mandarin arc before this was a great arc. It was really good and there was no buzz on it.
This was average. Yeah. This arc's been very average.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So also, we want to make sure that you help support the sponsors, Netflix.com. So they have over 90,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping both ways, Blu-ray titles if you want the HD, very fast delivery, usually within a day. The plans start from $4.99. You can get yourself a free two-week trial if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. And I'm almost on to ER Season 9. They made me cry.
Nice. All right, so on to the email. Our first email comes from Mike Graham, who writes in saying he was listening to our latest episode where we had a brief discussion about Trinity number 2, where Connor mentions that weekly books are paced differently than regular monthlies. He agrees with Connor. He says, I remember reading 52 and not really enjoying it until about 15 issues in, but I was stuck with it because I had faith in the writing staff. Countdown to Final Crisis was a book I absolutely hated, but I remembered how long it took for 52 to get rolling, so I stuck with it for the long run. Once I was halfway through, I realized the story was going nowhere, but I had already committed myself to have the series, so I finished it off. With Trinity, I wonder how much leeway we should be giving these weekly books. I know personally the countdown had left a bitter taste in my mouth, and I won't be giving Trinity anything longer than 5 issues to wow me, which it hasn't so far. But there's always this nagging voice in the back of my head that reminds me about 52. I love that book, and I was so glad I didn't drop it early on, even though the thought crossed my mind every week. So the question is, since these books are paced slower and the story takes longer to develop, how much slack do you guys give these weekly series? How many more issues before Trinity hits your chopping block? You said that you didn't enjoy the first 12 issues of 52. What made you guys tough it out?
I think we all have different answers for this.
Probably,
yeah. That probably makes sense.
I mean, you know what's funny? This is the comic reader's conundrum.
Nice.
I mean, this is it.
Yeah.
Except when you go to these weekly books like this, it's like magnified times 4. You're so afraid to miss out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's mainly me. I mean, like, I just – and part of it is because I couldn't tell you what – I couldn't tell you if I would have stuck with 52 or bought Countdown or be buying Trinity if we weren't doing the show and doing the website. Part of it is that I don't want to miss out on something in case something happens. So that's definitely – I mean, for me, that's a big part of it, is I just want to be there in case it happens and not have to play catch-up. So it's kind of hard to be in one – you know, in all the places at once. But you pick and choose, and this has got some juice behind it. So check it out, you know. But I mean, that's just me.
Connor, you're sticking with this stuff because you – generally enjoy it,
right? Yeah,
I mean
if you don't like it, you shouldn't buy it. I mean, just because you bought half the series doesn't mean you should continue buying it if you don't like it.
I mean, you're gonna get a feeling. I mean, what's true with 52 is the same thing, although I am starting to think of that was a bit of an anomaly. I mean, that was,
well, the thing that kept 52 going was that just by sheer force of will, Morrison, Johns, Rucka, and Wade, if it was 52 issues of bad, I would have wanted to read that anyway to see how these four great writers could fuck it up. You know, so it was like,
they didn't at all.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a bet on the talent. So here, whether you believe in Kurt Busiek and Mark Bagley enough to stick with it or not, you know.
You know, for me, I was out of Countdown, I don't know, probably 15, 20 issues in, I think, and I don't regret it. I was like, you know what, this isn't really for me. Other people seem to be enjoying it. I'm not enjoying it at all. That's fine. I didn't buy Trinity this week.
Wow.
I just was like, it was doing absolutely nothing for me. It wasn't even like a bit of me enjoying it. And I just thought, you know what, if you don't want to get it, you know, but you find out it's great later, they print trades.
Yeah.
You know, you can read everything.
True.
This is so.
Right.
I mean,
not everything.
Well, if you're doing a show.
Yeah. True.
But I would have nothing good to say every week. So, well, maybe I'm wrong. But maybe it'll be great, and then I'll go back and read it. And that I like do it. That's fun, too. How much fun is that to go back and like read something in a big chunk that you didn't like, and then you found out that, you know, it was better, and you go back?
Yeah.
I like that.
It happens to you a lot.
I'm very fickle.
PV writes and says, there's regular talk about prose writers crossing over to comics and the adjustments to the structure and tools of the medium, but when comics writers turn to prose, that's a question mark. I ask because I recently read Mike Carey's novel The Devil You Know, the first in a series starring a ghost-hunting detective-type protagonist, and was seriously underwhelmed. I almost didn't bother finishing it, which is something I almost never do with a novel. When Warren Ellis' novel came out last year, I read the first chapter excerpt and found it nearly laughably bad. Have any of you read these books? If so, what did you think of them? And the big question, with the possible exception of Gaiman, depending on how you feel about his novels, has any comics writer crossed over to prose successfully? And Rucka doesn't count because he started a novel. So am I missing something? Bonus question. Blah, 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 blah. That's, bonus question is too much more.
Jeez. Did Mike Carey start in comics or start in novels?
Is it?
I always thought that Mike Carey was already an established writer before he wrote comics.
Think so?
And I don't believe that's true.
Okay, I could be wrong. I just
a young guy when he first started in comics. I'm not sure where he came from.
Yeah.
He might have been a journalist like Gaiman. I'm not sure. I can't speak on this with any authority, but I don't think that he's. I think that novel, The Devil You Know, was his first novel.
Yeah.
But I could be talking out of my ass.
Yeah, I can't speak with any authority either. I didn't read Warren Ellis's novel, although I saw it and the font was so big I laughed. So
yeah, I didn't want to.
Yeah.
Everyone I know who has actually read it, who I know personally, really likes it.
Yeah.
Really? But they really are big. But those people tend to be big fans of Warren Ellis.
Yeah, they're biased. Yeah.
So I'm not saying they're biased.
No, they're biased towards Ellis. They're fans of Ellis. Yeah. So yeah. That's what I meant. So.
I read The Devil You Know and I quite enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the next book with the guy in it. So, I mean, if you just don't like the style, then that's, you know. There aren't really a lot of comic writers who I know of.
Peter David.
Peter David, yeah.
Yeah, he's a successful novelist.
That's true, yeah. He writes a lot of the Star Trek books and stuff like that, so, yeah.
He does original stuff, and
Peter David, there you go. Peter David.
Yeah, I wasn't drawn to read those. I did read, I mean, I guess you said Rucka didn't count, but I've read one of his Queen and Country novels, and I've tried to find the first Atticus Kodiak book, which I guess was out of print for a long time for a while. But the Queen and Country novel was really good.
Yeah,
but he's a start as a novelist. Right. A lot of those guys, like Wolfman, wrote a novelization of Crisis, and there was a novelization of Kingdom Come and stuff like that.
Roger Stern
did Superman, Death of Superman.
Yeah,
yeah, anyway. Yeah. But that's a comic related. I mean, it's basically
yeah. All right. Well, if you know of any
Peter David's the answer.
Yeah, Peter David is the answer. But if you know of any other comic writers that have successfully written prose, write in, let us know. Or if you have any other questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. So quick check into the voicemail where we hear our friend Daryl checking in.
This is Daryl stalking through the streets of New York waiting for the damn Avengers to get off that damn island already. And I want to say the Hulk was good. The best part was not those stupid character moments. It was Hulk smash. Him fighting another creature. Throwdown all over Harlem. That was the best part. You don't need all that character moment stuff. Sissies. Later.
It's always enjoyable to hear from Daryl, but what that shows is that the Hulk was a good movie because he liked it for the action. We might have liked it for the character moments. There's something for everybody.
you're a bunch of pansies, is what you are.
Apparently. I'm a huge pansy, according to Daryl. Next time I see him, he's going to punch me.
It's like he's my polar opposite. I mean, just completely.
Yeah.
You don't need character moments. I do. That's exactly what I need.
Hulk smash. So if you've got an opinion on the Hulk movie or anything else, you can call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. And speaking of movies and Hulk and stuff like that, just real quickly wanted to mention to everybody, Fandango.com is a great site where you can purchase movie tickets and stuff like that. Recently, we've been talking to them, and we put up some banners on ifanboy.com to their site to buy movie tickets, and there's a banner up for the Hulk and stuff like that. So if you need to buy movie tickets, go to Fanboy, find a Fandango banner, click on it. You can help us out in doing so. So we would appreciate it.
Especially when Hellboy comes out.
Yeah, there are going to be banners for Hellboy and Dark Knight and I think Wanted maybe, but whatever. Yeah, but so
the movies you're going to see anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So just click on a banner. Help iFanboy. We'd appreciate it. So
yep. And while you're there, you can check out Josh's Pick of the Week review on Scalped, and you can check out all the in-depth comic discussion and all of the news and all the columns we've got from the new columnists and if you were there last week, you saw Stack Week, which was our look at our growing pile of comics that we're not reading.
Yeah,
it was depressing.
Boatload of fun, and I feel terrible now.
Yeah,
I tried to make a dent today. It was laughable. while you're there and you want to help us out, you can go to ifanboy.com/store and you can pick yourself up some of the comics that we talk about, or you can click on the Amazon link if you were going to buy anything from Amazon anyway. Why not do that? And you can get there through ifanboy.com/store.
Excellent. And when you're at ifanboy.com, make sure you check out our video show, which comes out every Saturday. You can also check it out at revision3.com/ifanboy. This past Saturday, you saw us talking about our the best first issues, our opinion of first issues that came out. And next week, right in time for the movie, we'll be talking about Mark Miller and J.G. Jones's Wanted. So definitely want to check that out.
And every weekday, Monday through Friday, you get on ifanboy.com, you get our iFanboy Mini, which is a 1 to 4 minute little snippet of comic book fun.
And speaking of comic book fun, how about a t-shirt that says iFanboy on it? Why wouldn't you want that? Go to jinx.com/iFanboy, get yourself one of those. You can send them pictures of yourself wearing it, and they will send you stickers, and you could send those to us too, and we will probably be happy for that.
And as I mentioned earlier, you can contact us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
And social networks are fun. You go to ifanboy.com/about and you can see all of our links to our social networks, MySpace, Comic Space, Verb, Facebook, Twitter. Be our Twitter friends. We have more of you out there that are on Twitter than our friends, so come be our friend.
Yeah, and Twitter is a great – we're friends with a lot of comic pros. I saw Mike Norton jumped on this week, and Rick Remender's there, and Ben Templesmith. It's a fun place to be, so –
fun, sexy time.
Yeah.
If you like us and you want to write a review in iTunes, you could do that. Lots and lots of you have, and we appreciate that, but there's lots more of you who haven't, and we're a little disappointed in you. That's not true. We love you either way. Even better than that, just if you know people who might like the show or you can proselytize for us in any way, we would certainly appreciate that. Word of mouth is the best thing, and thank you very much.
Yes, and also it would be very helpful if you go to ifanboy.com/donations if you like what we do. If you want to send a couple of dollars our way, you can use PayPal to pay us, you know, chip in $5, $10, whatever you feel like. We really appreciate it. So it's ifanboy.com/donations.
I sent money to This American Life. I like what they do.
Yeah, if you like what we do, help us out.
Come on.
I donated to us.
Every day.
I felt so bad after writing my piece for Stack Week. My stack grew in size by 25% the next day.
Oh, geez, really? You just added more
easily.
To it?
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah, easily.
I keep borrowing books from Connor, which is sort of antithetical, really. I walked out of his house the other day. I was in his house for like 8 minutes, and I walked out with 4 books.
It's like a library.
It's fantastic, and it's so well organized.
It really is. Those shelves are nice, Connor. You should be proud of those shelves.
No one borrows books from me because my system doesn't make any sense.
I can't find anything. It's ridiculous.
Who's the smart guy now?
Oh, boy.
God. A lot of comics to read. A lot of comics. It's hard to believe that this much comics exist. That's what I struggle with in reading about everybody's stacks. I'm like, wow. Because everybody wrote about stuff that like I haven't read, and I'm pretty well read in terms of the comics. I'm like, damn, that's a lot of stuff.
Like, literally, the most common sentiment we get in emails is, damn you for making me buy another book.
I know. Jeez.
I feel kind of bad, but mostly because we don't get a cut of any of that.
It also happens to us, too, though. That's why.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Certainly does.
My pull list is stupid now.
Stupid.
My pull list.
Stupid like character development.
No, that's pansies.
Yeah.
There's a little moment where the character looked off into the distance and thought about his dead mom. Wuss bag. That's what I'm saying.
Actually, when I saw Hulk the second time, somebody yelled something derogatory out at him when he didn't have sex with Betty.
Oh, jeez.
I haven't seen it yet.
Something extremely derogatory. It's been out 2 weeks.
Yeah, statute of limitations is over.
It's been out 1 week.
Oh.
That's like 2 weeks of internet time by the time this comes out.
<laughs> Two weeks. Oh, God. All right, well, Josh needs to go see the Hulk. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am abused every damn week.
No fun. You're no fun.
A lot of fun.
Go to the movie.
You can't ever. I haven't had a chance to. I'm a very busy guy. Shit. It's not like this stuff writes itself.
It's not like it's your job or anything.
To go see a movie that you already did a show on?
Yes.
You know what they do for you people out there? They guilt me like a Jewish mother. All the time.
Ouch. Come on, read the book. You'll like it.
Oh, you haven't seen that movie? Ooh, you're missing out.
Oh, God.
You're missing out.
You sound like an Italian mobster there.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
Same thing. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is a, like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy,
If anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.